Good afternoon. You're listening to Campus K News for Thursday, April 2nd. I'm Taylor Heckert. It's been an unseasonably snowy winter across southeast Alaska, and Petersburg is no outlier. The town has seen a lot of snow this season, the fourth snowiest on record. Petersburg has gotten nearly 170 inches of snowfall, which is double the average amount. It's according to Lance Chambers, a lead meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Juneau. While it's been a remarkable winter, he says Petersburg would need to receive more than 50 more inches of snow to rank number one. He says that's unlikely.
No chance this season.
Chambers says this winter was so snowy because of a combination of factors. Sustained cold weather and multiple atmospheric rivers brought lots of moisture to the region, and a lot of that weather happened back-to-back, with very few breaks. Last month was exceptionally snowy. Chambers says Petersburg typically gets about 20 inches of snowfall in the month of March, but the town received nearly triple that amount last month. For those who are tired of shoveling their driveways, Chambers has good news. Spring is on the way.
April is climatologically our big warm-up, and that's already beginning, as I'm sure you can tell. And we're anticipating for that to continue through the month.
Chambers says he expects to see little to no snow accumulation in Petersburg in the coming weeks. Arctic sea ice has been shrinking in recent decades, reaching record lows both in summer and in winter. A new study shows a combination of this trend. Ice is sticking to Alaska's northern shores for less time than it used to. Researchers say this can have implications for the climate, resource development, and subsistence hunting. The Alaska Desk's Aliona Nyden reports.
Andrew Mahoney is a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute. In January, he and his colleague published a study in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Oceans. It focused on the ice that attaches to the shores of Alaska's northern coast, called landfast ice. They found that over nearly three decades, the landfast ice in Alaska's Arctic is forming later, breaking up earlier, and is not reaching as far offshore.
So it's sort of shrinking in time and it's shrinking in space as well.
Mahoney previously looked at the landfast ice in Chukchi and Beaufort Seas in a study published in 2014. At that time, the Chukchi Sea seemed to experience more ice loss, while the Beaufort Sea seemed more stable. This year's study showed that that has changed.
Now we're starting to see changes in the Beaufort Sea, that the Beaufort Sea of today is not the Beaufort Sea of the 1970s.
Mahoney says that while landfast ice is only a small fraction of the overall ice cover, it is the type of ice most people come in contact with. Indigenous communities have used it for millennia to hunt, like whalers in Utqiagvik in spring.
A large fraction of the community at any one time might actually be out on the landfast ice actively whaling. And the success of that whale hunt is in part related to how accessible and how stable and safe the landfast ice is.
Mahoney added that the oil and gas industry also uses landfast ice to build seasonal ice roads to connect to facilities. In fact, his team's study was funded by the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management with the interest of oil and gas development near shore. And when landfast ice breaks up earlier in spring, coastal communities lose a shield protecting them from the open water and waves.
There's a lot of erosion affecting these communities. Most of it happens in the fall, but we could start to see more erosion happening in the springtime if landfast ice keeps breaking up earlier.
The Arctic has been warming four times faster than the rest of the world. The recent landfast ice decline might be related to the overall thinning of Arctic ice due to climate change. But more research is needed to better understand the process behind it. In Anchorage, I'm Aliona Nyden.
A labor union representing Ketchikan shipyard workers has filed three charges against the yard's new operator. The union claims that JAG Ketchikan has refused to negotiate with them on employee benefits from a 2023 collective bargaining agreement. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, the new shipyard operator says it's not legally obligated to abide by that agreement.
The shipyard's labor union filed the charges in December, January, and March. Randy Golding is the union's Alaska business manager.
The biggest concern is the deterioration of the pre-existing conditions and benefits that we had negotiated for with the previous operator. With this new operator coming in, all that's off the table.
The union filed the charges with the National Labor Relations Board, asserting that JAG Marine Group is not recognizing them or their collective bargaining agreement that was adopted under the previous shipyard operator, Vigor. They allege JAG has made unilateral changes in terms and conditions of employment, including ending dirty pay, or special pay for work on ship septic systems containing human waste. William Earnhardt is an Anchorage-based attorney representing JAG. He says the company has no legal obligation to recognize the labor union or the collective bargaining agreement.
JAG is not a successor business. We didn't go in and just buy them out. So we're not a successor. We're hiring more employees. We're not bound by that contract.
JAG Marine Group took charge of the Ketchikan shipyard in September. That's after Alaska State Development Agency, ADA, ended a two-decade partnership with the shipyard's previous operator, Vigor. A 2025 letter from ADA cited Vigor's poor performance. Luke Rebecki is a Washington, D.C.-based attorney for the labor union. He says the Alaska chapter has represented Ketchikan's shipyard workers since 2022, when the facility operated under Vigor. Rebecki says the union negotiated a three-year labor contract that guaranteed wage increases and premium-free health insurance benefits, among other things. He says in January, under JAG, health insurance premiums went up by more than 25%. Here's Golding again, the union's Alaska business manager.
We want to make sure that the members are taken care of, and ultimately, we don't believe that JAG feels the same about the local membership as we do.
Bergen Wheeler is the general manager for JAG Ketchikan. He says the shipyard could have been shuttered if JAG hadn't taken it over. And he says the shipyard does currently offer voluntary, premium-based health insurance plans.
I myself and my family have signed up for it, and I pay the premiums to ensure that I have the good health care that JAG provides to cover my children and my wife and myself here in Ketchikan.
It is unclear when the National Labor Relations Board will decide whether to move forward with the union's charges. Attorney Rebecki says the board has a backlog of cases that were exacerbated by last fall's federal government shutdown. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
The Alaska House narrowly passed a bill yesterday that would update the state's corporate income tax to capture more revenue from companies that sell to Alaskans over the internet. The heart of the bill is a change to what's known as market-based sourcing. It's a method of calculating corporate income taxes that's based on the location of the customer rather than the company. Representative Calvin Trogge, an Anchorage independent, says the bill takes taxes companies are already paying to their home states and reallocates them to Alaska.
That business is taking place here. We should recognize that the business activity is taking place here, and we should get our fair share of that corporate income tax.
Backers say the tax change would have virtually no impact on Alaska businesses. The revenue raised by the bill would come from out-of-state companies organized as C corporations. The bill is essentially a redo of a bill Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed last year. Dunleavy's spokesperson says the governor's position on the bill hasn't changed. He says the governor opposes revenue bills without a fiscal plan. But the bill did not pass with enough support to constitute a veto-proof majority. House Minority Leader Delindo Johnson, a Palmer Republican, says her caucus is largely on board with Dunleavy's position.
The idea is if we're going to implement a tax, we need to have a fiscal plan. We don't want to just start passing tax bills without any other kind of piece of the fiscal plan.
Dunleavy proposed a fiscal plan in a series of bills earlier this year, headlined by a statewide sales tax and a large permanent fund dividend. Legislators on all sides panned the proposal. The bill now heads to the Senate, which supported it last year. Trogge says it's still early. He says he hopes the bill can pick up more bipartisan support as it works its way back towards the governor's desk. Librarians from across the state gathered in Sitka over the weekend to exchange knowledge and resources for the annual Alaska Library Association Conference. KCAW's Ryan Cotter attended a kickoff event highlighting local storytellers. And in a strong fishing town like Sitka, what better people to highlight the unique stories of the region than fishermen?
We were 50 miles from the nearest roadhouse with no tools of any kind. Donald managed to cram a wad of chewing gum on the hole, and that slowed things down a bit.
Dave Turcotte is a commercial fisherman who has been trolling in southeast Alaska since the 1960s. Yet, it was only 2 years ago that Turcotte began transcribing his experiences from the sea onto paper, earning him the title of a fisher poet. Standing behind a podium at the Sitka Public Library with the ocean at his back, Turcotte reads to a room of over 30 attentive librarians an anecdote chronicling one of his earliest memories in Southeast, which involves him and his fellow fishermen improvising a solution to fixing a hole in their gas tank while on the road to catch a ferry in Haines.
Somebody freshened the chewing gum, we added a little gas, and eased on to the next roadhouse. Someone was always chewing a fresh plug in case the old one fell off.
And Turcotte is not the only fisher poet sharing his work. Mariah Warren has worked as a fisherman across a wide variety of vessels for 20 years, half of them as a captain. One of the short readings she shared with the audience was a poem titled, Please Don't Die at Sea.
Please don't die at sea, my dears. Tell the story someday instead, over burgers and beers, about the time the storm called your name and you chickened out. The kids are listening. Those are the times that they need to hear about. Remember your heroes, those storm gray, bright-eyed women and Poseidon-bearded men? I know we all do. Please survive, so someday you can be a grouchy, salt-encrusted, wise, and inspiring old-timer too. Please don't die.
Sitting in chairs propped up beside the podium, Turcotte leans back into his chair with tear-filled eyes and pursed lips. Next to him, Paul Ryu says for a long time he struggled to understand how his routine life at sea would interest readers. He shares an essay where he realizes the life of a fisherman offers a unique literary connection between self-reliance and fate.
Rare days of pure winning are made sweeter by all the days of struggling, fighting weather, enduring poor fishing, and or depressing prices. All of this occurs in an awe-inspiring setting seen by an infinitesimally small percentage of the population, thereby a very exclusive club. You cannot fake your way in. You have to get salty to be salty.
One of the visiting librarians in the audience is Sandy Lukes, the outreach librarian for the Anchorage Public Library. It's Lukes' first ever Alaska Library Association conference, and she says listening to the storytellers gave her a greater appreciation for how crucial fishing is for communities like Sitka.
Me being from Seattle, I know there's a lot of fishing that goes around there, but I wasn't as close to or familiar with it, so it's really interesting seeing how much that is part of the livelihood here and what that looks like for people.
Tella Adsen is the fourth and final fisher poet and moderator for the event. She shares a humorous and heartwarming story of a fisherman who inspired her to embrace her queerness in their line of work. She hopes the librarians are inspired to highlight the unexpected storytellers in their own communities, fishermen or otherwise.
Sharing with librarians is awesome. Who better to share with than people who are professional story sharers, you know, and appreciate that thought that goes into it? I think the takeaway is, who are the people in your community who maybe people don't know they're writing or have their own stories to bring forward? Because we all have those folks everywhere.
As the event draws to a close, the fisher poets and librarians mingle, with some snacking on the fish treats caught and prepared by the fishermen themselves. With shelves chock full of books on one end and the large glass window framing Sitka Sound on the other, the patrons are surrounded by stories. In Sitka, I'm Ryan Cotter.
For Canvas K, I'm Taylor Heckert.